Welcome to another episode of the Film Rescue Show. I am your host and Pitchmaster General Seth. Today we are talking about Ghost Ship, directed by Steve Beck. And if you want to have a quick laugh, Wikipedia Steve Beck. It is the shortest article ever seen.
Literally ever.
Steve Beck is an American commercial and film director. That's all it says.
End of main body.
Yep.
What else can you say about the man?
What else do you need to say?
What else can you say? Because there's nothing else to talk about.
Right.
You know, my mama says when you can't say something nice, they don't say anything at all.
Hey, maybe Wikipedia is being nice then. If you enjoy this show and the other shows that we make, you can check us out on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Montressor Media. It's a dollar for access to our entire library. And with that being said, welcome to the show, our host, Jesse.
Hello.
And our guest host and returning character, Vic.
Yo, yo, what's up, everybody?
This one, I think Jesse, a friend of Jesse's requested it.
Yeah, my friend Kat requested this. Yeah,
it was going to be thrown off into next season, but then we had a little scramble to get an episode out today. So shot out a message and Vic answered the bat signal. Do you regret saying yes yet?
No, because I got the drink out of it. So, you know,
hey, there you go. Yeah, Ghost Ship. I remembered this movie being a lot better.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an early 2000s movie, so, you know, everybody, it always was better back then.
Yeah, I guess our standards were just lower at the time.
I think so. Like, imagine, remember TV back then?
I don't want to remember TV back then.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so this movie held a special place in my heart because as a youngster, I wanted to be a scavenger, a high seas treasure hunter. That sounded like the coolest job in the world. And so when this movie came out, and that was kind of like the pitch was, hey, treasure hunting goes bad. I was on board. And I was young at the time. I'll say that out the gate. I think I was like 12 or 13 when I saw this initially. hasn't aged so well.
No.
But,
no.
Let's talk positives first. Jesse, what did you enjoy about Ghost Ship?
I'll have to dig hard on this one. It's Carl Urban's in it.
Yes, he is.
He is. Yes.
One of his first starring roles. Yeah.
And he ate some beans.
Mm-hmm. Or did he?
Or are they beans?
Yeah. We'll get to that. Juliana Margulies is not too bad. I think this is her first thing after she finished her time on ER.
Oh, wow.
I think this is her first thing. She's not bad. She's pretty good. She's trying. Most of the cast is actually pretty good, with the exception of Santos, who I found incredibly annoying.
It's the sigh for me.
Yeah, I'm trying. I'm really trying. It's not like... It's not painful to sit through. It's completely watchable.
Yeah.
Would I say that it's good? No. That's all I got.
Yeah, it's very serviceable. Honestly, the first like 45 minutes or so, I was kind of confused. I was like, why are we fixing this? This feels like an okay movie. Like, even this plot setup feels all right.
Yeah, give it another 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. You get into the second half and it kind of shifts. Vic, how about you? What did you enjoy? Had you seen this before? Was this something that had been on your radar at all?
No, I had not. But one of my friends is a really good, really big horror fan. And she got excited when I told me I had to watch it. And I was like, all right, let's see. And I can see why you're nostalgic for it. I just hate positives. I did really like the interior, like the set design. Like, it looked like they were on a ship. I mean, it was bigger than a ship, but they looked like, you know, I believed where they were at. They had a squirt joke in there, and that was nice. And one that I didn't hate, so that's even better. It's like it was actually a little more subtle than I expected. And I, you know, I'll give him credit for that.
I know, right? I thought of another positive.
Oh yeah, you go ahead while I think.
Okay, so you know how they're on a boat, and you remember in the movie Master and Commander how the camera would constantly tilt left and right to signal that they're actually on a ship, the shifting tide. They did this and this as well. So so the camera is like, oh yeah, they're on a boat. The camera is constantly kind of swaying a little bit. Oh, okay, not bad. I like that.
That's pretty cool. Didn't
good eye. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah,
it's there. It's not as well. It's not as well done as Master and Commander, but it's pretty good. Yeah.
Okay.
That's literally all I have. That's it.
Yeah. I kind of like when I was first going through it, trying to figure out what was happening. I'd liked I like the idea of somebody of a spiritual entity possessing somebody on there. And, you know, jumping between bodies and, you know, doing like a making the crew fight each other thing. Well, I didn't get that, but you did get a little spirit jumping. So I was intrigued. I'm really digging deep here. Okay. I did like, on that topic, I did like when Santos came back and made the captain fight, God, what is her name?
I know the character names are not very good.
Yeah, and like their characters aren't very good, so like you know it mixes in. Epps was her name.
Yeah. Epps, okay. That's it. Epps.
Okay. When the captain had to fight Epps, that was I did like how they portrayed that. You know, we've seen it before, but it was interesting.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm also at a loss on this one. I normally can like suss out something unique and cool.
It has
within...
your favorite gore trope.
It does. It absolutely
in
does.
Spades.
The first 5 minutes of this movie tell you that this movie's going to be what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it never really tops the first 10 either.
Oh, no. That's the most interesting. That was actually, honestly, that was a positive. I liked the beginning. Because, like, they had gone into, like, a little more, like, not campy, but, you know, a little more heightened horror. Like, as far as, like, where crazy things can happen like that, then that would have been a direction, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe the crew needed to be bigger. And I'm already thinking of fixes because of how little I have to compliment. I wish it had been a gorier affair. The first 10 just kind of like blows its wad, and then there's not a lot after that.
Give me Evil Dead, but, right?
Right, yeah, Evil Dead on a ship. That sounds fun. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna use this as the transition into negatives. The positive is I love the idea of a heist at sea being executed in the 1960s, I think, was what they were going for.
64 is when the heist is supposed to occur, and then the ship is adrift after that point.
Yeah, because like the movie opens with like the 60s WB logo and all that. So it's like it's a wink and a nod. The opening very much tells you that it's going to be a good time, or tries to tell you that.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of a sea heist. Here's the transfer into negatives. I've never heard of a sea heist where you kill everybody on board.
Yeah, well.
Well, it's because it's not really a heist, as you've come to find out.
Yeah, explain that to me, because I'm still...
I am struggling. This is my first time, so I'm struggling.
God, what was the guy that hired them? What was the
Jack
dude?
Ferryman? Get it? It's a metaphor.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I did not. Oh Jesus Christ, I hate it here. Okay,
I get it. Jack the Ripper and the Ferryman of the River Styx. I get it.
Yes,
I get it.
Fairy souls. Yes.
So that's it's like the idea. I think is that they put the gold on the boat to entice pirates or marauders to come and try to take the gold, which will cause them to kill everybody on board to want to take the gold. But how would anybody know the gold is on board?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, are you leaking that information? Because can he leave the ship? Well, he left. I guess he left at the end.
Yeah, he does leave at the end.
Not there for the gold. So,
how did people know that the gold's on the ship? And
since we're in negatives, the last 10 minutes of this movie is inversely proportional to the opening 10 minutes.
Yes.
Oh man.
The insane amount of cheese that was shoved down my throat.
Jesus Christ. It's been so long.
The spirits leaving the ship, and then that quintessential 2000s ending of, oh, Ferryman's not actually dead, and it ends on a scream.
Yeah.
Oh my God. The music, from everything, from the music, like when the souls are ascending, almost John Williams inspirational music.
It's totally out of tone with the rest of the movie.
Completely. Yeah. Like, they spent so long fighting off the cheese just to, like, shove it down our face in the last 10 minutes.
She shoots the fucking C4 detonator.
Oh my God. That's why I was like, no.
Good shot.
Oh my God. That'll ignite it. I was so upset.
Oh God.
I was so upset when that happened. And the effects, man. Like, it's pretty. I feel like there was no effect that didn't take me out the movie.
What was this the same year that the Two Towers came out?
I think Two Towers was the next year, because that's the next movie Carl Urban did.
Oh, that's right. So this is Fellowship. So yeah, so Fellowship of the Ring came out. So they could have made better visual. Well, no, the budget is only $20 million. Never mind.
Yeah,
I see what you wanted to do. I get it, but
your job is to not take me off the movie. Whatever money you have, throw it at the effects that you can use that on. Because, don't reach for something you can't do.
But it's also weird in that the spirits are leaving the ship, and they're like, oh, well, they're free now from their imprisonment. But
he's still alive.
Were they malevolent spirits? Because they're apparently killing off the crew on this boat. So yeah. Should they go to heaven because of that?
Oh, that's true. They've killed. They've killed after death.
Yeah.
Some have killed before death.
Yeah. Maybe that's a loophole in the contract, man, or something.
Oh. If you die, you're absolved.
What's that thing in Halo where if you stick somebody with a grenade and then die, but they die anyways?
Oh yeah.
God.
Kill from the grave.
Yeah.
Kill from the grave.
Kill from the grave. Yeah. They're literally from the grave.
Still counts as a point for your team.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's a legitimate strategy.
Yeah, I'm trying to follow the logic here. And
I have a question. Mm-hmm. What is the tap out moment? Where in this movie do you feel so asphyxiated that you have to say, please stop. That's enough.
The scene where, who's the black guy?
Yes. Him.
Greer. When Greer gets transported back in time for some reason, that's the point where I'm like, fuck this.
Okay,
this is bullshit.
Mine was shortly afterwards when he tried to fuck the girl and fell down the shaft. mine was shortly afterwards. I thought that's where you were going with that.
I've heard of revenge sex, but this is insane.
Yeah, no, I was like, okay, fuck this.
No, actually, I lasted a little bit longer. My, because I laughed at that sequence. My tap out moment was where the movie gets to the point where it goes, damn, I guess all of this really is confusing. Here's an early 2000s rock montage to explain the poisoning.
Oh,
I was really confused. Oh, yeah. I was like, where's the, first of all, this could have been scary. This could have been creepy.
It should have been in the opening of the movie.
Yeah.
Is your opening.
Yeah, that would have been crazy. And then we would have seen more. And like, that's a whole sequence. Not just one scene, one shot. That's a whole, like, yeah.
And like, normally I'm an advocate for visual storytelling, which is what that is. Like, you can't, it's hard to ignore rat poison in the center of the screen as visual storytelling. I'm not saying it's subtle, but damn, that whole sequence was like frustratingly 2002.
It's so in your face all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I had just watched Blade 2 last night, which is also from 2002, which is also egregiously 2002. Mm-hmm. that movie at least earns it by having Wesley Snipes deliver one-liners, and it's fun and you have a good time. This movie just, that is not the tone of this film at all.
No.
Nope.
I don't know where that came from.
Like, it could have been, if they had just stuck with the beginning, like, that what they kept dead at the beginning and stuck with that, you could have had a much better time.
And why not make it, like, slow-mo and set it to Senza Fine, the opening song? You know, have, like, a little symmetry in your movie?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, does it make too much sense? I'll stop.
You're doing it wrong, Seth. You're doing it wrong. It doesn't make money?
No.
I mean...
Okay then.
I mean, this movie made money. It made almost $70 million.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
they
made profit.
Wow,
they made profit. A lot of profit, actually.
Well, it was a Halloween release in 2002, and I don't know if y'all remember the state of horror movies in the early 2000s.
Oh yeah, it sucked.
So it can.
Oh
good.
Boy, did it suck!
What was a good horror from the 2000s? I'm trying to remember.
Say what?
Any good horror?
Dead Silence. James Wan's Dead Silence, I think, is the only like standout horror movie from the early 2000s.
Hostel?
Okay.
First Hostel?
Is that horror or is that like gore thriller? I don't know if that falls into horror in the same way.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's more of like, what was it called? The Splat Pack? It was him, it was Eli Roth, it was Rob Zombie, and there was a bunch of other people as well.
Yeah.
James Wan was in that as well for
yeah.
Saul.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
Which, like, the first Saul's very reserved overall.
Yeah, right, it is. Like, compared to
like,
no
the
rest
money.
Where they went.
$1 million.
Yeah. Well, like, Amanda escapes the bear trap at the beginning. I don't know if people recall, the only, like, really gory sequence is cutting off the ankle. That's...
Yeah.
And that's at the beginning. That's what everybody remembers.
Yeah. The whole movie leads up to it, too.
James Wan did an interview about that, and he said when they put it together, they realized that... there was like no gore in the entire movie. They'd forgotten to do that because they didn't have any money. And he realized, oh God, I made a PG-13 horror movie where a guy cuts his foot off, but we don't actually see it. So they went back and they shot a new scene for when Amanda has to cut that guy open and get the key out of his stomach.
Yeah.
So the hands that are pulling up the entrails, that's actually Lee Winnell's hands.
Oh,
nice.
He was wearing Amanda's shirt and he was pulling up the guts himself because Shawnee Smith wasn't available.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's
so.
Funny. I love their friendship. They're great.
And on topic for us, we're not talking about Ghost Ship.
There's nothing to talk about. The movie sucks.
Go ahead.
It's a real quick thing. Like there was a random part in the middle. I'm trying to remember exactly where. It was like probably close before the midpoint, I think. They were dropping into water. And the way they framed it, and because of editing shit, and so the way they framed it and cut away, it looked like for 2 seconds, they just changed aspect ratio. Like, it's because, like, they had jumped, it, and, like, they cut back to the shot. It was, like, behind something, and, like, it's made the frame smaller. But, like, when they first cut for, like, 0.5 seconds, it looked like they just changed the aspect ratio. It was like, did they just leave something in there? Did it just confuse me? Like, and I yeah, and that took me out of the movie as well. But that was it.
I didn't even notice that, so I'm glad you're calling it out right now.
There you go.
Like if I can find the runtime, the time marker. There we go.
Right. Here's a fun new sequence for Film Rescue Show. Let's do some math.
Oh,
sure.
Great.
Let's do some math.
Favorite thing.
I'll put in a theme song here. Let's do some math.
So the price of gold in 2002 was about $300 an ounce.
Okay.
There are 28 100-ounce gold bars in each box, and there's 9 boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What did the movie say this gold would be worth?
$200 to $300 million?
All right, so let's do some math.
Quick math.
At $300 an ounce times... 100-ounce gold bars, that's $30,000 per bar.
Okay.
Times 28 in each box.
Oh, this is,
much less. $840,000. I have a calculator. I'm doing all the work for us.
Okay.
$840,000 per box.
Okay.
And there were 9 boxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's about $7.5 million.
That's a pretty large... That's a pretty large margin of error there, Gabriel Byrne. Wow.
Well,
oops. Well,
you know, they're excited.
I mean, still, like, it, $1 million a person? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't have any argument with that. I would stay on a scary boat for $1 million.
I'm good,
sure.
Yeah.
If it was diamonds, it'd make more sense because that's more valuable, but.
Right. Also, gold's really fucking heavy, and for the life of me, couldn't remember how the movie ended, and so I thought the ending was going to be one of those, like, monkey's paw situation where one person gets away with all the gold, but then their ship sinks because the gold's so heavy.
That brings up a thing I want to ask. So, at the end of the movie, when they do the stupid cliched ending, they're loading the gold onto another ship? I thought the gold sank.
Yeah, I was confused about that, too.
Well, you see, James Cameron showed up with his diving crew.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
And that sequence was so extended. Like, the moment that rock song started, you knew it was about to happen, and they made you wait. They made you wait that whole time, that whole line of people.
Oh, yeah. I remember Mudvayne. I remember from the 2000s.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. I don't miss Butt Rock. I just don't.
Butt Rock. I've never heard it called that before. Okay.
Really?
No, I have not.
Oh, yeah. That's like the whole Creed, Mudvayne,
Nirvana.
Nirvana. Like grunge, the post-grunge era.
I'm okay with all of it except Creed. Fuck them.
Do you guys remember when Spider-Man 2 came out and they hired Creed to
make
a song?
Look, man, look.
That was Nickelback.
Oh, that's right. It was Nickelback.
Fucking Nickelback.
Chad Kroeger, that fucking piece of shit. God damn it.
Those bands are interchangeable to me.
Oh,
Nickelback,
God.
Creed, it's all the
same.
Oh, they're all the same.
It's all long-haired dudes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Henry Rollins has a good bit about that on one of his albums, and he's talking about how all the music in the early 2000s sucked, and every single line of lyrics is always, and he's like, dude, what are you saying?
I have a vivid memory of that Spider-Man 1 song.
Oh, yeah? So let's say that.
Yep, that's the one. There we go. That's the one. I just didn't want to sing it because I can't sing. I was hoping you would do it.
There's a great Portlandia sketch about someone falling in love with an Eddie Vedder tattoo that sings, and they got Eddie Vedder to sing for the tattoo. It was great.
I remember that episode.
Yeah, that's about how I feel about this movie. Yeah,
it can stay in the 2000s.
The movie's watchable, but it's not good. It, when I was watching it, I called the movie like pitiful and pathetic. I was like, "Oh, they think they're scary. Aw,
yeah.
They think they're really very scary. Oh, they're not.
Honestly,
oh, this is so creepy. Good job, guys, being so creepy.
It probably was scary in the 2000s.
It's this came out 1 year after 9/11. It was difficult to be scared by anything at this point.
There you go.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I will say, one other big negative I had was the lighting. You said that this looked a lot like a Paul W.S. Anderson movie, Seth.
Yes, it very much does.
It's so bright. It's so bright all the time, man. It's like, where's the light coming from? There's no lighting on that ship. There's no power.
Oh, the most egregious version of that is when they walk into one of the halls and there's reflections of water from the ceiling.
Yeah, I was saying, like,
where's the power coming from?
The ship has no power. It's totally dark.
They even say the tank is dry. They even expressly point it out. Like, there's no fuel.
Yeah, like, where's the motivated lighting?
Yeah, the motivation of the lighting is to be bright, and that's about it.
That's, I mean, because I didn't even think about that, but, like, there's nothing, like, the ship is completely dark. It should be only their flashlights and whatever they set up.
Yeah, if you want to see some really creepy footage, go and look up, like, divers going into sunken ships. It's a really creepy experience. There's, like, no light down there. If you want nightmare, that's like nightmare fuel to me, like deep ocean water. Like, ooh, I will never go scuba diving. It scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Those the oil rig cameras that are like 3 miles down and they see like the weirdest shit down there. That's the kind of stuff that like will keep me awake at night.
Yep. Yep. I went and looked up like deep sea footage of like giant squids, and God, that shit's just like nightmare fuel.
Ooh, I know. Yeah. Ooh, that's
speaking of, you guys seen Underwater?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff in there. I can't say it's good.
I didn't realize it was a secret Lovecraft movie. I was like, holy shit.
I didn't realize, but I think it's confirmed that he wanted that to be Cthulhu. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Of the third act reveals that I've seen in the last couple years, that's definitely up there.
Yeah,
definitely. I was like, okay.
Like, is that the first time Cthulhu has ever appeared on screen?
I
don't know, because Call of Cthulhu was a movie back in the 40s.
I was going to say, I feel like it was.
But he's not like on screen like that.
Yeah.
Maybe Cabin in the Woods kind of counts. I guess that's like an ancient Lovecraftian god system, but.
Oh, South Park.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Or the intro to Rick and Morty.
Exactly. He had several on-screen appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that definitely really like matter, the best, most realistic one.
Mm-hmm. That was really cool. I just wish TJ Miller was not in the movie, but you know.
So I want to read for everyone a line from the Wikipedia explanation, because I don't know if this makes the movie better or worse. The line says, "This man is revealed as Jack Ferryman," talking about the cut scene to the past, the guy in the shadows that tricked everyone into killing people.
Uh-huh.
Jack Ferryman, who is a demonic spirit of a deceased sinner. First of all, demonic spirit and deceased sinner, two different things. A spirit's a person. A demon is a demon. Demons aren't people.
Yeah.
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 This demonic spirit is tasked with provoking people to sin and then killing them and bringing their souls to hell. Where was that in the movie?
It is explained in like a single line of dialogue at the tail end of the film.
But like, dragging people to hell seems like a really cool third act reveal, if you ask me.
Yeah. They made a whole movie about this. It's called Drag Me to Hell.
And it's very corny and very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Follow. Just what we're hearing is we should have got Sam Raimi for this.
Dude, that's Dead on a ship.
Yes. There you go. There's the first fix. Get Sam Raimi, please. Yes.
Perfect. Because like, he would do some wild shit with this. And
it feels like an Evil Dead movie, because it's like, it basically feels like The Cabin, where they go to the cabin and then all this weird shit starts happening. Why is it happening? Well, it's just fucked up. It's just fucked up and weird.
Yeah, but we just need a weirder shit to happen.
Yeah, it needed to be more cheese. You know, either go hard into the paint with being like dark and horrifying, or go in the opposite direction and make it like cheesy horror, like Evil Dead.
Yeah, like if you're gonna
split down the middle with this thing, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, it's riding the line where it really should have. Like, if your opening is gonna be gory vivisections, make it a gore fest on a ship. If you're not gonna do that, make it cheesy, goofy, fun horror on a ship.
Yeah, exactly.
I saw that one of the producers on this is Robert Zemeckis, and I think about like 10 years earlier, Robert Zemeckis produced Tales from the Crypt.
Oh.
So this feels Tales from... No, the whole series. It was one of his ideas.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was one of his ideas. And I think that if you had cut this down to like a half hour, 45 minute episode of a Tales from the Crypt story, perfect. Mm.
Totally.
Perfect. This would be a great Tales from the Crypt episode, but as it is, it's... not so good as a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
at least it's a tight 90 minutes.
That's
with
true.
The credits, I think there's like 83 like... minutes of total movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
Barely enough there.
They shot to the end. Like, they once they started dicking around, they're like, all right, we're good. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm confused. It's very confusing, like, why it rode the line so hard. Like, what were... Because it's R. Mm-hmm. It's definitely an R-rated movie.
Yep.
But, like, for probably 60% of it, maybe even 70, it feels like a PG-13 horror.
Yeah, it's really tame. Like...
Like, blood coming out of bullet holes in the wall doesn't give you an R rating.
And also, I feel like... Yeah. I feel like Blade had better blood effects in this movie. Cause like, ugh.
Well, also a lot of the visual effects are what are the gore. Like the CGI in this movie is most of the gore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't do
like
that.
The vivisection sequence, like half of that is just like bodies sliding apart, but it's clearly visual effects.
Yeah. It's very clearly.
I am glad the final shot of the vivisection sequence was a real arm where somebody was down underneath the set reaching their arm up through a hole.
Oh.
That adds to it. Like that really, yeah. That adds to it to me.
Yeah, you definitely need the real shots, but like less CG if it's not going to be good. Like if you have the budget for it, just less CG, please, or let, you know, figure out how to use it right. Because it's just every, like you said, every scare, every gore thing was like, oh, that's not real. Oh, this, something's about to happen. Oh, they're getting ready for the effect to happen. It's just,
Well, oh, compare this to the director's previous movie, 13 Ghosts, which is like CGI all the time.
That was like, nuts. That was more nuts, though.
Yeah.
That is the prequels version of a horror movie. Just do it all with CGI. We don't need real anything.
Yeah.
Wait, so I was trying to think about, you said they have to, they lead them to sin and then kill them. I know the black guy, whatever his name is, I cannot remember. He was
Greer.
About to Greer. Thank you. He was about to cheat on his wife, and then he dies. But was, I don't think that was true of anybody else, right? Because
does it count as cheating if it's a succubus? I'm asking for just purely hypothetical reasons.
I can't answer that for you, Seth. I'm not a succubus. I'm not an incubi.
I don't know.
I'm just curious. Like, if you bang a ghost, they're not real. So,
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I just recently started playing Resident Evil 8, and Big Titty Vampire Lady just showed up. So, ooh. I don't know.
I don't know anything anymore.
Did you see that picture I dropped in the meme chat on Discord?
No, I didn't.
It's hilarious. It's a picture of the Big Titty Goth Vampire holding up. Master Chief.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Because she's like that much taller than him.
She's like, I'm gonna crush you.
I feel bad for any Ghost Ship fans that are listening and just like screaming at us, guys, concentrate on the movie. And I'm like, man, the movie couldn't concentrate on the movie.
Exactly.
So you're asking a lot.
It was very difficult to hold my attention. I never hated it, but I just couldn't pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Like I had to rewind a lot.
I was doing other stuff throughout the rest of the day, like cleaning and laundry and stuff like that. I'd come back to it every like 10 minutes, and I would unpause it, and I would watch about 20 minutes, and I would stop. Because it's so dull.
Yeah.
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 Man. Honestly, the mm-hmm. scariest sequence might be the ghost force, whatever you want to call it, opening up the propane tank when the ship is about to leave with the gold. That was like the actual most nail-biting sequence. I don't know how starting your engine blows a propane tank, but okay.
Also, do ships like that carry propane as fuel?
No.
No, why is propane on this boat?
Are they about to grill or something?
I don't know enough about boats to answer that correctly. If anyone wants to correct us, our email is filmrescueshow@gmail.com.
I would like answers.
That's on you, though. We need to know. I missed one positive. I did miss one positive.
Okay.
This movie has one of my absolute favorite disgusting tropes.
Oh, is it the scene where they're eating the mealworms?
How did you just key right in on it? Yes.
It's the only other thing in the movie, Seth.
the trope of hungry characters find food, and then that food is swapped out for something gross. Yeah. It's one of my favorite scenes in Minority Report, where he gets the spoiled milk and the moldy sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that the Muppet Studios made that moldy sandwich? It's actually a felt puppet sandwich.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
yeah, that? Crazy. But yeah,
it's just so talented.
little things you pick up along the way. But yeah, that scene where they're eating the beans and they're like, oh yeah, these beans are good. And then suddenly it's maggots and it's like, oh, gross. I love that trope. I really love that trope.
Yeah. It and they definitely wouldn't be good by that point. Okay, they'd be bad.
Yeah, a 40-year-old sealed can of beans. I'm having doubts on if that's going
to
be.
I didn't try it.
Yeah, I don't even know why they tried it. Like, it's supposed to. I don't think non-perishable lasts like that long, right?
So now, yeah, like a can of beans from right now, they're sealed so well that they would last probably about 40 years, assuming that there's not like it, like extreme heat or something like that. Yeah. But they would now, but at that time, no.
No.
Yeah.
They wouldn't last.
Wait, when does this movie take place exactly?
I guess of its time, 2002?
Yeah, because it flashes forward to now.
Yeah,
I think, or 40 years later. Yeah, so 2002. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it starts in 64 and goes 2002. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 62 to 2002. So 40 years.
Okay, gotcha.
I wanted to be frustrated, but I just didn't care enough. The scene where they find bodies in the pool, and they're like, "Those bodies can't be more than a week old." And at that point, no one just goes, "Yeah, so let's leave."
Yeah, because there's like clearly pirates or something that have been on this ship.
Yeah, like this boat is tagged. Somebody's coming back literally at any minute. Mm-hmm. Let's bounce, guys.
I mean, best case scenario, they think you're best case scenario. They think you did it. Worst case scenario, they're coming back to do it to you too. You know,
so right? Leave. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like maritime law, which gets brought up a couple times. Also, this movie should have been called Finders Keepers. That just makes way more sense for the villain.
There already is a horror movie called Finders Keepers.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, wow.
But you can't trademark that term. the idea of maritime law applying here. They go to great lengths to explain why they would be able to keep the gold, because like the brands have been ground off, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. If there's a crime scene, you lose all rights to whatever you find.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that's a law they didn't bring up in this.
I'm sure they didn't.
Yeah.
They probably
like
didn't.
if you find a sunken yacht at sea, sure, yeah, that's yours and you can plunder it to your heart's content. If you find a dead body in it that's like not obviously ancient and definitely obviously murdered, you have to call the Coast Guard.
Yeah. Because you could be trying to take evidence home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You found a crime scene.
So if
this is at all confusing, imagine you're walking down the street and you see an open door and you walk in and there's gold on the floor and a dead body with a knife in its chest. You don't own that crime scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm still gonna take the fucking gold.
Well,
I mean, you just don't get caught with it.
Right.
Just don't get caught.
Why did this guy get murdered? We can't figure it out without the evidence.
Oh, well. You know, I can figure out my $1 million.
There is not a single problem in my life right now that could not be solved with a giant pile of cash. Okay?
True.
So I think I have an idea of what they were trying to go for here.
Okay.
It's The Shining.
I didn't want to say it because I couldn't think of a good pun for The Shining at Sea.
It's the Shining at Sea, yeah.
That's
it's the blood pool, yeah, I get it.
From sea to shining sea.
Yes, the ship wants its souls, and it will take the souls.
Yep, it's just everybody. The Shining.
Yep.
Have you guys seen the tagline for the poster?
Oh, God.
Sea evil, I get it.
It's just sea evil, but it's S-E-A.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That poster, that image, the skull at the bow of the ship, that has been copied and pasted onto like 7 other movies.
Oh yeah.
Like, it's such a simple trick to use that. It looks like a stock image.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody went into this with the best of intentions, but it's the movie's just so just devoid of content and character, and there's just there's nothing to really grasp onto. Like, we're struggling to find positives and negatives.
Yeah, right.
Usually we have at least negatives. We don't even have negatives.
Yeah, this definitely gives the vibe of people who came in and did their job and hated their job.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have a hard time hating on it because it's literally until it's very watchable until the last, like, literally last 5 minutes. That's where it, and that can be probably said about a lot of early 2000s movies. The last 5 minutes was like the make or break time at that time. Because that's what people walked out of the theater talking about. That's why the original Blair Witch is an hour of nothing, and then the last 5 minutes are like off the walls horror. That was just kind of the shtick back then. Thankfully, we've learned that, hey, you can just have a good movie for the whole movie. That's possible, guys. We could do this. But yeah, like I have a hard time hating, but like I don't know if I'd. You can't make fun of it. Like, you can't roast this movie while you're watching it. It's not, like, egregiously poorly made, so you can't, like, beyond, like, really particular, like, filmmaking aspects that a normal person's not going to be able to pick out, like lighting and editing and things like that. There's nothing to roast on it, so... But I wouldn't, like, consciously turn it on again.
No, God, yeah. No. God, no. It has nothing to offer me.
The worst part is the movie made money. It made almost $70 million against a $20 million budget.
Right.
So we can't call it a blunderbuster because it was a blockbuster. It made money. It made money.
That may have more to do with the state of horror in the early 2000s than anything else. Probably wasn't much.
It's possible.
Probably wasn't much for horror fans. Like, that was kind of a...
There was Final Destination, there was all that crap.
Let me read off some of the horror that we got in 2002. 28 Days Later.
Oh. I already said corrected.
The Ring.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Signs. Dark Water. That one's okay, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's okay.
We got The Grudge came out in 2002.
Oh. Okay.
Red Dragon came out. Queen of the Damned, which is like a cult movie now. I wouldn't call it horror. It's not horrifying, but it's really fun. Uh-huh. But then I list all those, but then also let me show you the bad ones. Hypercube.
I didn't hear
Halloween.
That.
Is Hypercube the third Cube movie?
Chronologically, yes. It's the second one. Sequentially, but chronologically, yeah, it's the third one. It's the one where the cube is in space, and it's a four-dimensional cube now.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
We also got Halloween Resurrection.
Oh, God. Wait, is that the one with the whole, in the, what they were doing, a show?
Busta Rhymes.
Oh, God. Oh, God, no, fuck.
Busta Rhymes, Karate Kicks, Michael Myers.
Yes, oh, my God. I really try to scrub that from my mind.
Eight-Legged Freaks came out in 2002.
Okay, I like that movie. I had fun with that.
Well, okay, but it's not horror.
Oh, no. I was able to watch it when I was a kid, and I was terrified of horror as a kid.
Oh, Eli Roth's Cabin Fever.
Oh, fuck that movie.
Oh, and Rain of Fire. We talked about that earlier
this
season. Oh,
hey, Rain of Fire. Hey, yeah, that's okay.
Again, I don't know if I call that horror, though.
I guess action horror, maybe? Survival horror? Well, not survival horror, really.
I'd throw that into, like, action thriller. The horror aspects. I'm not scared of dragons, so...
Yeah, probably action thriller then, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, yeah, 2002 was a mixed bag, it looks like. And this movie is the perfect metaphor because it rides right the middle.
Yeah, uh-huh. For real. Yeah, yeah. Honestly, it's right in that 50% margin. I did not know 28 Days Later was 2002.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was what did they shoot that on, Jesse?
Mini DVs.
Yeah.
Mini DV cameras.
And like it added to it. Like that's literally an aspect of the movie that makes it better rather than worse.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Visual.
Yeah.
That's how you shoot when you don't have did they have a budget?
28 Days Later?
A minuscule one.
Okay, yeah. So that's how you shoot when you don't have a budget. You find ways to make that interesting.
$8 million and it made 85. Holy shit.
And it deserved every bit of it.
Oh, it probably deserved twice that, to be honest. Yeah.
If they had done this film with mini DV cameras, everyone's kind of going in there and just looking around the ship, like a found footage movie, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Well, and doesn't that, like, that's what these salvagers do. They film everything. Because
they film everything for evidence.
They have to scrub back over the footage to like look for evidence and you know things that they missed in case they want to go back. And
so why does nobody have a camera?
Yeah, you could have had this movie, all the shots be motivated by something. It could have been like, you know, people recording, you know, and just have the whole thing. Somebody looking through the all their footage spliced together to see what happened or something like that, you know?
Right, right. As compared to Paranormal Activity, where the movie setup is, hey, I put a camera in the bedroom. It's not for sex, I promise.
It's not, I promise, I swear.
We'll put it let's a line in the movie. Like, I'm not, that is an actual line in the movie.
Yeah.
Wait, is it really? Uh-huh. Jesus Christ.
Yes,
it is.
Oh, I haven't seen that in so long.
That movie is like literally 80 minutes of nothing and then like baby powder footprints and invisible blanket tugging. Like, that's it.
Those movies are like watching paint dry.
Yeah. Especially...
But why do I love them? That's the question.
It's like, oh, the chair removed. Who gives a fuck?
You must be a masochist, Seth. That must be it.
I really, also, I just like being on my phone when I watch a movie, and that movie gives me an excuse to.
Oh, God.
Facts. I might rewatch the first one.
The second one's the better of the series. Mm. If you ask me.
We'll see. We'll
I
see.
Still would never encourage you to ever watch them. There are better things you can do with your time. Like, I don't know, rearrange your sock drawer, pay your taxes, go get your car washed. There's plenty of other things you could do.
Huh. Well, you know.
Orin Pelly is mad at you, Jesse.
Fuck him.
So, any final closing thoughts on Ghost Ship before we put a wrap on this and jump into the pitch?
It's watchable, but I would never encourage anybody to watch it.
I don't know what happened. The editing upsets me, but not much happened.
Jesse, we need to make the antithesis to your film list, which is movies you never need to see, even if somebody suggests them to you.
Just ignore them.
Just ignore them.
It's like, yeah, skippable movies. Like basically, like half of Will Ferrell's filmography.
Yes. Ghost Ship obviously is on that list. What else would be in there?
I'm gonna punish myself.
Just like
because
you can't. You can't...
Titanic, maybe? It's not really worth your time?
I
don't know.
I'd watch the scenes from Titanic, at least. There's a lot of good in there.
I'd put on Titanic before I put on Avatar.
Well, yeah, fair.
Okay,
facts,
yeah, Avatar facts. You don't need to see. Avatar you don't need to
Avatar's
see.
Avatar's a full skip.
Yeah.
Full skip. Don't waste your time.
Because, like, you don't want to put so bad it's good movies on there. Like, The Room, I would say, is required watching.
Watch it.
Yeah. That's like required watching because it's so bad it's good. But then Ghost Ship is like, it's just so meh, it's meh.
Yeah.
It's as bland and mediocre as you could possibly make a film.
Oh, I put Pirates
like,
5
you know those
on
days?
Too.
Oh, yeah, Pirate full hard skip on the last, I think 4 and 5.
Four and five.
Yeah, no, they can go.
Yeah, that's about where I'm at with it too. I think that's going to do it for our review. Stick around for our pitch for how to make this better. I think we've dropped a few breadcrumbs along the way of what we would do to fix this, but we'll see in a minute. In the meantime, however, stick around for a word from one of our friends.
Hi, I'm Micah McCaw.
I'm Jordan McCaw.
And we host the McCaw
Podcast Universe.
We cover film franchises, and we exist to prove people wrong when they say that sequels are never better than the originals.
We are a weekly podcast that takes on film franchises. In each franchise, we talk about which movies work, which movies don't work, and we analyze how the franchise fits in pop culture and influence future movies.
Previously, we've covered Marvel, Mad Max, Shrek, Toy Story, Harry Potter, The Twilight Saga, The Lord of the Rings, Jurassic Park, Terminator, Pirates of the Caribbean, Hannibal, and we're about to jump into Batman. Previously, we've had Amy Johnston on our show, Ilram Choi, Nick Turner, and we're about to have Kevin and Will Hines from Screw It We're Just Gonna Talk About Comics On, and Rachel Shank from the Infinity Podcast.
The Macaw Podcast Universe comes out every Friday.
And you can listen to us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. That's the MPU, the Macaw Podcast Universe.
Welcome back to the Ghost Ship. We're talking about Ghost Ship. Yeah, middling line movie. Fixing these tends to either be a chore or really fun. I'm leaning to this one being really fun because so far we've pitched replace the director, Steve Beck, American commercial and film director.
God damn it.
I almost spit on my drink when you said that, damn it.
He's never going to come up on the show again, but that's how I'm always going to refer to him.
Well, 13 Ghosts is a remake.
That's true. It might come up on Split the Difference.
Oh.
Possibly.
Oh.
We'll see.
That's a show run by Jesse, also under the Manchester Media label. We'll plug that again at the end, plus all of our other stuff. Yeah, so fixes. Sam Raimi directs. Yeah, on board.
Yes.
Already better.
Evil Dead on a boat.
Now, I would also like to... let's do a double fix, actually. Let's fix this movie twice at the same time. So we're going to run with the Sam Raimi cheesy horror.
Okay.
And then let's also start a pitch for the first 10 minutes is the setup for an even gorier movie.
Okay.
Sorry, you said the first 10 minutes is the setup for what?
For an even gorier movie. So, like,
okay.
the pushing NC-17 hardcore gore ghost ship is the other fix. Because I feel like everyone who still likes this movie mentions the first 10 minutes, and rightfully so. But I think it doesn't pay off with that the rest of the way through. So let's do a cheesy fix and a gory fix. Those can run in tandem. And then we'll let the audience decide which one they like better.
Okay, I'm with it. So what would be a step beyond, like, Event Horizon for, like, the gorier? Because, like, if you were going in the direction of Event Horizon, what would be the next, like, step movie-wise?
Good question. Saw 3, traps, trap rooms on a ship sounds like a fun idea. Like imagine Hostel at Sea.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The ship was designed by A.J. Holmes. There you go.
Perfect. I like that idea. I like that a lot. So that's the other fix. To be clear, no one was designated as the fixer for this movie in this episode, so we're just kind of open writing a room here.
Yeah.
Just shout ideas out as they come. What else did we land on during the review? I feel like we had another idea back there.
Definitely the camera thing. He said,
found footage. Salvagers going in and examining the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I think
weird shit. Yeah.
That presentation could work for either version too. Like Sam Raimi found footage sounds like a really good time.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. He already had to do some crazy stuff with Evil Dead.
Exactly.
Another thing is if you're going to shoot it in a ship that has zero power, please make sure it's nice and dark in there like The Descent.
Yes.
I mean, Jesus Christ, ooh. Like
that's a good idea for the gore version director. What is his name? He directed Hellboy. The new one.
Neil Marshall.
Neil Marshall, yeah.
You know, he's great. Yeah, that's great actually.
Didn't he also do Dog Soldiers?
He
did do Dog Soldiers.
That's right.
Which is good. I like that movie.
I just went on a Twitter rampage about how vampire, zombie, and werewolf movies aren't good, but then listed the good ones, and Dog Soldiers made it into that list because that movie slaps.
That movie is dope as shit. Like, it's badass is all I can say about it. And so, yeah, no, I think that's an excellent choice. Like, he's already shown The Descent. He can take advantage of the environment. And in dark places, and he didn't need a budget.
You know, I have an idea for the gory version. I want to see how this lands with you guys. If we're going Neil Marshall, what about a ship? Did you guys see Pandorum?
I don't remember too much about it.
Yeah.
It's a movie where it's like a long distance space flight goes wrong, and a bunch of people wake up and they descend into like absolute madness and become like this cannibalistic incest family.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically Wrong Turn in Space, but the movie starts after all of that happens. So the first guy leaves hypersleep and can't figure out why there's mutants on the ship, and you think it's aliens the whole time until you figure out that, oh, it's not aliens, it's just the crew that's been alive for like six generations in space.
That's fucked. That is fucked and very interesting.
So I'm thinking, what if we did something like that where the little girl and maybe a couple other people survive the initial like gun down, and the gory version isn't Ghost Ship, it's like Death Ship. And they've lived off of the bodies and the stuff on board and fishing and those kind of things. But now there's this like small colony of like the Descent style monster people.
Yeah, because they would have evolved differently and been not having any light or anything.
Yeah, it's like the hills have eyes at sea.
Okay. I'm into this pitch.
Yeah.
And so the setup is like initially it's a death ship. It has these like Saw type traps, and you're thinking, man, what kind of fucked up person would have set this thing out to sea in the 60s? And then the reveal is the traps are from the people that live on the boat.
But what are they trapping?
Oh, okay. So they're trapping people into
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'm into that. And they're like,
it's
we don't want to leave
ghosts.
At this point.
It's better than ghosts.
See, ghosts
work for Sam Raimi because he knows how to run that line between like ghosts and possessed people and mutants and like the Evil Dead. You can't put one finger. It's just evil. You know what I mean?
Exactly. We don't know what the hell it is, but like it's evil.
Yeah.
What I don't think. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
I was about to say what I was thinking of is in that scene in Evil Dead 2 when the Evil Dead's chasing Ash through the house. Like the way Sam Raimi visualizes that is scary and funny. Like,
yeah,
it starts off terrifying and then he starts looking around for Ash and stuff, and it's just like I could see like that something like that on the sequences like that on our campy version.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, like honestly, we could stick for the campy version. We could stick with something similar to this. And you could have that whoever the main bad guy is. Cannot remember his name. Ferryman. How can I forget that? Excuse me. And have Ferryman just be that. Like, have you guys seen Demon Knight?
Demon Knight.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, have Ferryman.
The Tales from the Crypt side story movie.
Mm-hmm. And then we got the Rob Zemeckis connection, too. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Billy Zane and Jada Pinkett. That's right. I have seen that.
Yeah, that movie. Yeah. And so have him be Billy Zane. Honestly, I would get Billy Zane for this.
I'm not opposed. For the Sam Raimi version, I want to see how this pairing strikes with you guys.
Okay.
Sam Raimi directing a cast of Wayans. Just all the Wayans in one movie.
Ooh. I would actually really be in. That'd be fucking nuts. That'd be off the walls. But like, Sam Raimi can rein them in.
Exactly. Like, I do enjoy their spoofs a lot. Don't Be a Menace is like probably one of my most quotable movies, but I don't know anybody else that's seen it to quote it to. So
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's so funny. but yeah, Vic, you're right. It's like they are too wild, and having Sam Raimi know where to aim comedy is really helpful. So I would kill for that pairing in any context. Like any movie with Sam Raimi and the Wayans sounds like a home run.
Yeah, because he's zany, they're zany. We just got to find the right camp. I mean, and honestly, he worked with one of the best camp actors out there, you know, so.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, Bruce Campbell has to have a cameo in the same
movie.
Well,
yeah, of course. He's the main bad guy.
Well, no, he's the 60s ship captain.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Right?
I can see it all happening now.
Because then he can be a ghost later.
There you go.
He could be a ghost, a helpful ghost. Okay.
I like that.
Yeah, if you're going to have a ghost on this ship that actually is helpful, that's something that is in the film proper, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the little girl is like,
That's horror trope number 305.
Yeah, you know. Exactly.
It's The Shining.
Why is she not evil?
Well, because she's innocent. Remember, he's trying to corrupt people to sin, and little kids are innocent.
But so every single person on that entire boat was guilty of something?
They went to heaven, though. So it's okay.
Okay.
So it's okay.
I really wish I had an answer for you, Jesse. I really do.
It's fine. I get it. It's okay.
Oh, very young Emily Browning, too. Is that her first movie?
I think that was.
I would imagine.
But... Isn't she like 25 now or something?
She is 32.
Damn.
Yes. Lemony Snicket's was 2004. So.
Oh, okay.
Let that sink in for a second.
Wow.
I feel old.
2 years after this. Wow. Okay.
Oh, she was in The Man Who Sued God. That was her first film.
Oh, okay.
She must have been little, though, because that was 2001.
And we could really lean into the way they corrupt people, because that's supposed to be an important thing.
Yeah, in the campy version, the corruption feels like the most fun you could have with it.
Mm-hmm. Like, you could have Greer trying to have sex with somebody, or it could be, you could see where Sam goes with that.
Trick somebody into eating human meat.
Yeah, there you go.
They think they have opened up like a can of like food, of like meat or something like that, and it turns out it's actually human meat.
Oh, have you ever heard the story of the albatross?
No, fill me in.
Okay, so this is like one of those short stories, Tales of the Crypt kind of thing. So there's a ship stuck at sea, and the crew is going insane. And from like hunger and thirst, right? Mm-hmm. So they decide that they're going to eat someone, and they draw straws, and the short straw loses, and they, kill the guy, and they cut him up and eat him. And mm-hmm. they continue to do this until there's only like four or five people left, and then they get saved, and the captain's one of these people, and the captain. Leaves with the rescue team, and they say, "How'd you guys survive?" And he says, "Well, we ate albatross." That was their excuse for the cannibalism, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So then he becomes this like hero for surviving and saving these couple guys with him, and goes on this world tour and just keeps telling a story. You know, we survive by eating albatross. We survive by eating albatross. And then one day he walks into a restaurant in France, and the chef is a huge fan, and he says, "Oh my God, I know how to prepare good albatross. You're gonna love this."
Oh man! So,
oh man!
So he prepares albatross and brings it out, and the captain throws up, with the implication that he knows that that's not what albatross tastes like. Yeah. So do something along those lines of like that kind of fuckiness. That could land in either movie.
Honestly, that's fucked up. Yeah, that's fucked up.
I got one that can one up that. You ever heard of the? You ever read the Stephen King short story Survivor Type?
No.
Mm-mm.
So it's a short story about a guy that's trafficking. He's a doctor trafficking heroin, and his plane crashes in the ocean, and he washes up on an island with all this heroin, and he's just like he's stuck there. And he's waiting for rescue, and he figures he can find the birds, all the seagulls that are flying around the island. He can catch them and kill them and eat them. That's his food. And he's chasing one day, and he slips and breaks his ankle.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And so now he can't chase the birds, and he's stuck. So he decides to start cutting off pieces of himself and eating it.
Oh, man.
And it's all told in first-person perspective until eventually it gets down to the point where he's only like surviving from the waist up.
Ugh.
Jesus Christ.
And then it just kind of peters off into an ellipsis. An ellipsis is the ending, ... and that's the end.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's fucked.
That's really fucked.
Oh man.
Yeah, he has to shoot himself up with so much heroin so he doesn't feel any pain.
Is it cannibalism if you're eating yourself?
I don't know.
Honestly, we could do a lot of vignettes of like people going through different crazy shit like that, like different karmic shit like that.
Well, and yeah, exactly. This is the kind of movie to do this in too, where like to make the shooting really cheap, you get everybody separated, and then you only have to shoot their scenes.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about scheduling.
Exactly.
What's the most fucked up thing we can come up with? Well, let's film it. There you go.
Exactly.
Somebody gets tricked into eating part of himself. There you go.
Boom.
I love that.
Just anything other than what they did in the movie that we have.
And if you played it for like semi-comedy as well, you know what I mean? Like somebody accidentally leans on a hot frying pan, and then when they smell it, they're like, that actually smells kind of good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, because it finds out they're being inhabited by the ghost of a cannibal or something.
Yeah, actually, that's really cool. I like that.
There you go. Yeah. Boom. The ghost is a cannibal ghost. And maybe it's like he looks like Slimer a little bit, so the food just falls right through him.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that'd be funny.
That's fun. That's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
feel like a super gross and super, super like offensively violent or goofy and over the top, like Evil Dead or Dead Alive or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you can't just be in the
anything other than middle of the road.
You can't be in the middle. It literally doesn't work.
No, middle of the road is the worst place to be.
Yeah, the movie proper, like, its scares are based around seeing dead bodies. But
we've seen so many horror movies where there's dead bodies that it's not frightening.
Yeah, and like in real life, sure, yeah, if I happened upon a dead body, I would be frightened for a minute.
Yes.
But if I was on...
I mean, go back to the original Poltergeist, the pool scene.
Yeah.
Those were actual dead bodies. I'm not sure how the fuck they got approval for that.
I was about to say, was it?
Like, Jesus Christ, isn't that like offensive to the remains of a person?
Yeah, a little bit. We're going to film you.
What?
And people reacted
to
you.
Why the fuck?
If my option...
Who directed that? Who directed that?
Oh, not Spielberg.
God.
Was it Landis?
No. Shoot.
Tobe Hooper.
Toby Hooper.
Toby Hooper. That's right.
There
that's right.
Toby Hooper.
How the fuck did they get approval for that?
This is all conjecture.
Yeah.
All conjecture. But the making of that film, the reason that everybody calls it a Spielberg movie instead of a Toby Hooper movie.
Because he secretly directed it?
He secretly directed it. I also think he was secretly like shielding the whole production and just like using his 80s weight to throw around, because like at that point he had, you know, Indiana Jones, Jaws, like he had all these like home runs under his belt, and I think he was like shielding the production in the background.
Yeah,
again,
I can see that.
Just conjecture, but otherwise, I don't know how you get away with that kind of stuff.
I mean,
that just seems like an incredibly poor taste.
Stanley Kubrick basically mentally abused what's her face.
Yeah.
Oh, Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, I've seen her recently. Have you seen her recently?
I have not.
No.
I have not.
It's not good.
Oh, man.
God.
Yeah, yikes.
No, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. She has, like, very bad mental problems now.
I'm sure. You could just do anything back then. If you made enough money, you could do anything back then.
Damn.
You can do anything now if you make enough money.
Another example as to how the auteur theory does not mean you should be a dictator on set.
Yes. Yes.
You don't need to be a prick to make a movie.
Exactly.
You know?
Thankfully, this was directed by Steve Beck, and you know what we can say about him? He's an American commercial and film director.
God damn it, Seth.
Oh, shit.
He brought it back around.
Man.
He brought it a full circle.
Oh, God.
I love the Sam Raimi idea. I love good horror comedy, and good horror comedy is hard to do.
Yeah, very difficult.
Yeah.
It's a thin line.
Well, because I think the best way to...
Top of the heap at this point is still either Evil Dead 2 or Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things that, like, it should make sense. Like, how many times have you been, like, scared by somebody and then ended up laughing?
Yeah, exactly. It's like the natural antithesis there.
It's like a natural human experience that when you find out that you're actually safe after being very scared, you laugh. That's that. So it should be easy. There's not a lot of movies that pull that off in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Where, like, the Deadites are, like, just no cap, fully frightening. They are insanely scary to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she's saying, like, sexual stuff from the basement.
Oh, yeah.
They're also funny. Like,
there's no jokes. There's no jokes or punchline there. It's just like, I'll suck on your fucking dick. It's like, that's just funny.
The insanity and the performances are excellent, but also it's really the insanity. It's all like, We're all just at like level 10, right? Like level 11. We're all going crazy with him.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like the thing I like to point out, especially with Sam Raimi, a lot of people hate on Drag Me to Hell. You haters can just go watch other movies.
It's okay. It's okay.
So, okay, but here,
I think the problem with it is the overuse of CGI.
Yeah, yeah, definitely leaned a little bit too much on that. However, it has one of my favorite edits in cinema. The exorcism scene in the big round table cuts from I forget the actress, the main actress from the movie.
Is it Alison Brie?
No, let me, that doesn't sound right.
Let me see.
She looks like her.
It is
Alison Lohman.
Yep. There you go.
Oh, so I was close.
Very close.
Justin Long's Allison, in this movie. Ew.
So it. Oh yeah, he plays the damsel in distress, and it's so funny. that comedy just writes itself. But during the exorcism scene,
oh shit, she's married to Martin Eveldine.
Nice.
How about that?
It cuts from her acting her ass off with the most frightened face of all time to the goat.
Oh yeah. That's right.
And the goat in that shot is a puppet, and it looks at her and goes, meh. And it is the funniest cut. Like, the whole scene is like presented straight scary. The goat's there to be sacrificed and like bled out, and like it is presented as like frightening. And then the cut from her screaming her head off to the goat, and it's just like, holy shit, I would have never thought of that in my life.
That's funny. That's funny. I think I heard that like the theory is like, you know, in periods of high tension, you really want to laugh, to, you know.
Exactly.
After
yeah,
a while
yeah.
to break it.
Yeah. So then flipping over to the gory cannibal boat. What I guess I want to see what endings we land on. So the Sam Raimi ending feels like, you know, it's really easy to just go Evil Dead with it. The main character survives, they get out of the situation, maybe a little sequel setup. But overall, it almost feels like it pays off the actual ending of this movie better than this movie.
Yeah, I was gonna say I want to do something with that with the rock music and the guy coming out. What was it? Ferryman coming back out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the remake of The Hills Have Eyes?
I did, but I don't remember how it ends.
It ends with the characters kind of walking off, and then it zooms out, and then it zooms out further and further until you see, oh, it's through a pair of binoculars. So someone's watching them. It's like, oh, they're not going to escape.
Oh.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
So you're saying that for the Sam Raimi version?
Yeah, it's the Sam Raimi version.
Okay.
Just like implying that, oh, they can't escape.
I like that.
Okay, there is no escape. Okay, maybe. Okay.
Or
Go ahead.
Or they take the supplies from the salvaging ship, and they use them to create like a beacon or shoot a flare up, and that draws other salvagers to their ship.
Hmm.
That way they can just keep bringing people to them.
Yeah.
I like that.
So whoever survives the next run of it will also send a flare up, not realizing they're just keeping the cycle going. I like that.
I'm trying to just talk something out. This might not work, but you know how the bad guy always survives at the end, and like, you know, we see that coming. We know that trope from a while away. How can we like kind of reverse that for like the good guy, thinking they survived and then not? Is there like, I'm just like I said, I'm trying to talk it out. Is there a way for us to reverse that? And use audience expectation.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I'm trying to think of the way to make it work. You could. So I don't. My like go to producer brain is saying that you should do the end like they did in this movie, except for it's the ferryman for a second, and then someone walks past, and now it's like a you know non person, somebody that we don't know.
Yeah.
You could do that to like maybe infer that it's PTSD or trauma or something like that. You could go
or like the ending of Carrie, where she has a nightmare.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Okay.
There you go.
You could also go hard the other way and have the main character die and take the ferryman down with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like the captain goes down with the. if their last line is something like the captain goes down with the ship and they like sink the ship on purpose,
mm-hmm.
and they all go down, and that act, it like that selfless act frees all the innocent spirits, that I could see that working.
Okay.
It's definitely like more badass.
Ooh, okay. That person that does it is a shithead that always tries to escape. And they tried to escape again, but they weren't really able to. it was a fake sacrifice, and he was like, "No, I'm really gonna escape." And then he died on his way out. So they're like, "Hey, it still counts. Free him."
I like that. How about the gore version? What is the mm-hmm. the ending to that? Because I feel like Hostel has a fucked up ending, right? Where it's like implied that they're gonna chase him down again. Am I misremembering?
Well, the opening of Hostel 2, they do chase him down.
That's right.
The opening is like 10 minutes of Jay Hernandez, like, he's off, he's safe. And then it's like, nah, they kill him anyways. Then it goes off into another story, which I hated. I hate the sequel.
The sequel's about the bachelor party, right? Or is that Hostel 3?
That's Hostel 3. Hostel 2 is the women that are traveling through Europe.
That's right.
Hmm.
Yeah. The bloodbath one, that's the second one, I think.
That's right.
Yeah. Hostel 2 is not good. That's not good.
How did Bad Times at El Royale end again?
I don't remember.
I remember he shot, the guy shot most everybody.
Oh, Bad Times, don't they all die at the end of that?
Except for Cynthia Erivo, I think.
Oh, that's right, because she gets to leave with
the
with
money.
Jeff Bridges'
okay.
money. Yeah.
Okay. Never mind then.
And I'm all for a movie where everybody dies at the end. Like
that's kind of
absolutely
I was
all for that.
That's
well,
I
guess
thinking.
if you're doing like a straight found footage gore fest, the implication is somebody found the tapes and not the person, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. So we could reveal at the end that it was like more of a found footage thing. I mean, we could like you know to be like somebody was looking at it, and what then?
Hmm. Yeah, how do you subvert?
Oh, I got it.
Okay.
So another salvage crew finds the tapes or something,
mm-hmm.
and they also see that the gold is in the hull of the ship.
Mm.
But the ship went down, and even after all the shit they've seen, they organize a rescue party to go and track down where the ship sank to get the gold.
Okay, yep. Yeah, that's about right.
And then the cycle continues.
That's a pretty perfect ending, honestly.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Yeah, because then the sequel could be when they get there, the ship's resurrected to the top already, and now
like, wait a minute, where did it come from?
Yeah,
how did it get back
yeah,
up?
Yeah, now they're like they're questioning what they saw on the tapes, so you can't rely on the past movie for answers.
Perfect. That's they're like, we'll beat it. We know what we're doing. You know, we've already seen it before. It's a cheat code.
Yeah. That's kind of what they did with the Blair Witch remake, the Adam Wingard one.
That was Adam Wingard.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
not surprised.
The first movie's not reliable.
Yeah, exactly. Like the first movie's not only not reliable, but it's also part of a loop that ends with them looping back into the beginning of the first Blair Witch.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's a time loop. That's right.
Yeah, cuz the witch like controls reality in that area, I guess, was the implication.
Okay.
It has the dumbest character death of a horror movie because you only die if you look at the witch, and so they're looking at the witch with the pop-out camera on their on their Sony handcam, and then at the end, the witch copies the guy's voice, and she just turns, and I was like, dude, there was one role.
Doesn't matter who's calling or who sounds like who, just look through the camera.
Confirm that it's him in the camera first, you dumbass.
Yeah. I think it's meant to be like a Medusa situation or something like that. Like, don't look at Medusa, she'll turn you into stone.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Really quickly, are we talking about... Go ahead.
It was the same thing in Clash of the Titans when... Perseus is using the shield to look in. He's looking at the reflection in the shield, so that way he doesn't get hit by her, you know, freeze ray or whatever the hell it's called.
Right.
Or like Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Who looks in his
where
iPhone.
Where they got that idea from.
But real quick, while we're talking about stupid horror characters, do you guys remember the that movie with the killer plants and like the temple?
Little Shop of the Ruins.
Yes, the Ruins. Yeah.
The Ruins.
That girl that was taking pictures when they told them not to take pictures and got everybody killed because she was taking pictures. Y'all remember?
Yeah.
I hate tropes of like, the dumb character did a dumb thing and now we're all gonna die for it. I always hate
people. Yeah. I just wanted to say fuck her.
Doesn't that sound like an American tourist to you, though?
Well, yeah. They can't tell me what to do with
my camera. I mean, they did the same thing in Midsommar, but that film pays off a lot better.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Also, it all makes sense in Midsommar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes sense in Midsommar.
I would love to... This is like a total side pitch. I would love to do a movie like The Ruins, or like remake The Ruins, but do it with a bunch of actual YouTubers. And ooh. And the point of the movie is basically the Jake Paul suicide forest thing that these dumbass YouTubers are going to be dumbasses and they all deserve to die for it.
Seth, yes.
So
yes.
Secretly, you're insulting them the whole time?
Dude, you go to the release and the movie's a huge success and they're all stoked on it and they don't know that the movie's just giving them the middle finger for an hour and a half.
Just killing them all in the most painful way possible.
Yep.
Perfect. Perfect.
I would love that. I wish they'd give you money for that.
It would be fun. You just keep it like you get a director that can just keep everything hyped up the whole time. Like, no, this is perfect. This is excellent. This is, you know, like the hype beast guy. And then when it comes out, the shift into, yeah. So I made fun of six YouTubers for an hour and a half. You're welcome.
Ooh,
the world.
Paul Verhoeven. Paul Verhoeven. He's into it.
There you go.
That's the energy.
Perfect.
Yeah, that hard satire energy. He needs a comeback. Has he died?
I don't think so.
No, he's still working. He did a movie a few years ago called L, which is actually quite good.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually good. Go check it out.
I wish he'd make something that got more attention, because I haven't heard of that, and he deserves the best.
Interesting. Oh, wow. That's a... His filmography's like the jumps in time between his projects are like 2 years, 2 years, 2 years, 6 years, 2 years, 2 years,
yeah,
2 years,
he takes,
5 years.
Takes a lot of time off. I don't know what he does between his projects. So.
Probably whatever he wants.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
lives off royalties, I guess.
If I made RoboCop and Total Recall, Starship Troopers, I can do whatever I want.
I mean, yeah, Starship Troopers alone, the merchandising for that has to be coating his pockets.
Oh, hell yeah.
We'll never let him live down Showgirls, though. Sorry, Paul.
Wait, that is... Okay, not what I was thinking of. Never mind then. Wait, what was the one... I was thinking of Burlesque. Never mind then.
Oh. Burlesque.
That's what I was thinking of.
What was that Ewan McGregor one that's Moulin Rouge?
Moulin Rouge. Yeah.
Those are the kind of movies we never get to talk about on this show. Nobody wants to fix things like that.
Hey,
we fixed our first comedy this season.
Wait, which one?
I mean, Curse of the Pink Panther.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
It, like... I think action movies and like thrillers and horrors tend to be the movies that are really plot heavy. You know, like a drama is mostly about character decisions. So like harder to fix something like that. The plot isn't as important or I guess isn't directing the movie in the same way. So I guess that's why. But yeah, we don't get to fix like, have we ever done a musical?
No, we haven't.
Oh no!
Rent,
yeah,
Rent. Maybe we could do Rent.
Oh,
how about that?
Oh God,
I could do The Greatest Showman.
Oh, we did do The Greatest Showman.
Oh, that's right. Lost the audio for that, didn't you?
The fix for that was awesome too.
Oh, wait, what was the fix?
Make Hugh Jackman a racist bad guy. Make Zac Efron not in the movie. The movie centers around the freaks in the circus, and then the score is done by Panic at the Disco. Done, like. Perfect.
Yeah, why didn't they? I don't know why they didn't do that in the first. Oh, because they wanted to make easy money and not.
Well, because it's hard to make Hugh Jackman look bad. Is why he's too fucking charming.
And everybody's like, we don't want to not like Wolverine.
Yeah.
But also, you shouldn't like P.T. Barnum either, so you know.
I think if I recall correctly, we also took out Zendaya because calling her a circus freak is an odd filmic choice. Mm-hmm.
No, mm-hmm. She's not.
Not in the slightest.
Yeah, we just decided to center on the bearded lady because she was the best character in the movie.
Yeah, that's easy. Yeah, you had a bunch of... And what was the short guy's name?
Oh, I forget. I watched that movie one time, and that is the extent that I will ever watch it.
I was in the theaters when that movie was out, so like that's all I heard. I was working in the theaters, so that's... Every theater was just... I was hearing the ending of the movie.
Oh. It catchy music.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's how they got me with the music. I eventually checked it out because of that.
I feel like we're circling the drain here. Is it time to wrap this thing up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're not even on topic anymore because the movie's basically done.
Yeah.
Take your pick. Gory, cannibal, found footage survivor story, Saw style, or Sam Raimi and the Wayans give us the best horror comedy of the 2000s.
Yeah.
And everybody dies.
Sounds like a win-win to me.
When did Scary Movie come out?
Oh, ooh, I want to say 99. But,
1 second, hold on.
I think Scary Movie 1 was 99 and Scary Movie 2 was 2001.
Oh, no, 2000. It was
2000.
It was 2000.
Okay. Okay.
Carmen Electra. Good
luck
going.
Best?
Good luck going to a Hot Topic or Spencer's and not seeing Carmen Electra in the 2000s.
Oh, Jesus.
What a time to be alive.
What? Ignore my ignorance. What did she do? Was she just a model?
She was on Baywatch.
Oh, okay. So she was the next Pam Anderson.
Yeah, she was. Basically, Baywatch was like an excuse to have women with huge boobs on screen.
Running in slow motion.
It's daytime softcore porn is what it was.
So we just don't need the excuse anymore. There's just boobs on TV.
Yeah, you don't need the excuse anymore. That's all it was.
Yeah, now you just put it on the premium channels and you're good.
Not even on the premium channels, dude. Like, some of the stuff that I see on non-premium channels, I'm like, man, HBO and Starz really rubbed off, didn't they? Because how do you top that? How do you top that?
I mean,
TV has to catch up. That's the only option.
Yeah. Or just don't watch regular TV.
Yeah. But I mean, like, yeah. Think about Breaking Bad and the stuff they did in that show on AMC.
Oh yeah. It was on AMC. Yeah.
Jesus
Walking
Christ.
Walking Dead was wild on AMC.
Meth Damon shot that kid in the face. Well, I think that's going to about do it. Gentlemen, thank you for the wonderful pitches. This was a much better time than the movie.
Yeah, well, yes.
Yes, of course.
But of course.
I'm sorry, Kat, that we shit all over this movie. I know you like this thing, but we didn't like it.
Yeah, same, Joss.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. That's the big praise.
It's as mediocre and barely passable as you could make a film. You know what? You know, I just realized, you know those movies that are like meant to go straight to video or something like that?
Yeah.
That have the first like 10 or 15 minutes is where all the effort goes. And that way the executives look at the movie and they're like, yeah, it's good enough. Go ahead and ship it to the theaters. I feel like that's what happened with this.
That sounds right.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Like they put all the effort into the first 10 minutes. And after that, it's like, nah, everything else is just like as bland as you can make it.
He was just riding off his 13 ghosts high, you know?
American commercial and film director Steve Beck just put his back into the first 10 minutes and then just fucked off to eat Danishes from there on.
Yeah, another Danish movie. Awesome.
He let the assistant director direct finish this one off.
Why not? That's what they're there for, not? Right?
Yeah.
That's what to assist me, right? And assist them with the rest of the shoot.
Assist me to the snack table. Vic, thank you for jumping on at short notice for this film. Is there anything you want to plug at the end here?
Well, my social media, VicJ_795. My friend recently had an event, so I'll be posting pictures from that.
And Jesse, you host a couple other shows with the Montressor stamp of approval on it. Tell us about those.
Well, we have That Weird Ass Game, where we discuss weird, unusual games. We have a new episode we need to do pretty soon, Seth. We got to talk about that pretty soon.
Oddworld, right? Weren't we doing Oddworld?
Oddworld, the first Oddworld. And we also have Split the Difference, where we compare original films and their remakes. Tomorrow we're doing the Bad News Bears. That's going to be a lot of fun. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can find me on Twitter at HardcoreBshot.
Spoilers, 2005 was not better than 2002.
Nope.
And then for us, like I said at the top, that's our Patreon at patreon.com/Montressor Media. Access is one singular dollar a month, and you get the whole library, all of those shows, plus Palette Cleanser, which is the offshoot of this show where we talk about good movies, as well as So What Else, which is the show where we talk about whatever's going on at the moment. We formulated that idea during the pandemic when there was nothing to talk about. Now we have content.
Lots of content.
Shocking. I think next time we're shooting to interview someone and maybe talk a little Mortal Kombat. I might tell people about Jupiter's Legacy and why you can skip it. And I think that's about it. I've been your Pitchmaster General. You can check me out at Seth X Decker. If you didn't like any of my hot takes, you can just tell me there. It's fine, I promise. That's going to about do it for the show. Gentlemen, thanks you for joining me.
Of course. Happy to help. Happy to be here.
And this is the end of the show. Good night.
Good night.